Check this out.
It is time.
Check it out, y'all.
You are now about to witness.
And it goes a little something like this.
Alexander Ovechkin curl and drag to the back end. He scores! Simply sensational! Brodeur looking for the goal. Down the ice. Score! Martin Brodeur!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to another edition of the Game Time Decision Podcast. As always, joining me is Graham Anderson and Nick Segan. I am Colton Prale. We have a bunch of topics to discuss that we made about 5 minutes ago. So as you can tell, this episode is going to be fantastic. Our best ones are always this planned. Guys, let's start this off. Before we get into duos, and that's going to be the majority of today's discussion, is just some of the standout duos from the 2016-2017 season. I want to just do, you know, a little bit of the hot teams that are streaking. Graham, I know you're desperate to talk about your 2-8 Wild over their last 10, so why don't you start us off there?
Oh, God. March has been a lovely month for me. That's why Chicago now leads the Central by 7 points. In the last 10 games, Minnesota's gone 2-8-0. Chicago's gone 8-2-0. So Chicago is streaking, playing well when at the most opportune time when you want to be playing well. I don't like Minnesota playing this poorly with the playoffs 3 weeks away. It really has me worried. The only thing that I am kind of fortunate about is this weekend they play Vancouver and Detroit. So this weekend they should win both those games. If they don't, I'll be concerned. So hopefully they don't get back on track tomorrow against San Jose. And then I think they have Vancouver, and then before Vancouver, I think they play Ottawa or something. So, I mean, some decent opponents this week, but this weekend is when they should finally turn around. Hopefully before that, though, the one thing that will save me is the last 4 games of the season. I go Colorado, Carolina, Colorado, Arizona. If Minnesota doesn't go 4-0 to finish the year, I'm worried. Like, I'm worried we'll get out of the first round. It's this 2-8-0 that we're on. It's not a skid you want to be doing in March. It's not a skid you want to be doing any time of the year, but especially not in March when a week ago I was competing for the division title. And now it's like, I just hope I stay in second. And so great for Chicago fans, crappy for me and all the other Minnesota Wild fans. All probably half a dozen of us that live in Southern Ontario. But
that's a generous estimate.
If there's even that many.
Yeah.
Did they start to skid when they lost to Chicago?
Was it last weekend, or
2 weekends ago?
That's probably what started it. And I mean, and that's that in an unfortunate way, I think that might foreshadow what comes to the playoffs. If we have to play Chicago, if history.
Yeah, that's, itself, I mean, that's kind of what I'm wondering.
We're not going to get past Chicago if history repeats itself. You know, we had been beating Chicago consistently. I think we were like an 8-game win streak in the regular season against Chicago. Like, they hadn't beaten us since the 2014-2015 season. In the regular season was the last time they beat us. But then they beat us in that game, and then it's just kind of all fallen off there. So I don't know what it is. I don't know. Like, it's not like my guys are hurt. It's not like Dubnyk is letting in 6 goals a night. Like, it's just we're not playing good in March, and this is not the time to play bad.
The streak started with a 6-5 loss or a 6-5 win, or just ended. Sorry, started in March just after their win over Winnipeg, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Chicago certainly didn't help, but it was a little before that. What's interesting, I think, is over this past month, like while all of this has been going on, the team themselves haven't been playing brutal hockey. You know, like at even strength, even at all situations, they lead the league in the last 13 games played in expected goals for. Their possession numbers are fine. Like, they should be a plus 10 in goal differential over this time frame, and they've been getting pooped on. And, you know, it's just the way the sport goes sometimes, and it really sucks that that's what's happening to them right now. And while I'm not super worried about the results, because I think that will change, like, look, you keep playing this way, you're going to get wins. You know, if you've got a 60% expected goal share, you're going to win hockey games. It doesn't matter when, it's going to come. what I do wonder about is the mental aspect of it all. You know, the playoffs are just around the corner. You're playing well. You keep losing. What does that do to your psyche? Especially in a time like this where you're already so tired.
Well, and that's exactly where I feel those last four games of the season when I'm playing, again, to reiterate, Colorado, Carolina, Colorado, Arizona, should go 4-0 easily. If we don't, then the mental psyche is even more so going to be royally messed up, because those games should be 4-1 wins. All, like, we should be a plus 16 goal differential just in those four games alone. But if somehow, you know, Carolina manages to pull out a win, or we lose against Arizona in the last game of the regular season, like, I'll be concerned. I'm not going to lie. You know, like Colin just said, you know, it's not that we're playing poorly. We're just unfortunately in a bad slump right now. But I need to take advantage, and the team needs to take advantage. I say I, like, I'm playing for it. you know, the team needs to take advantage of a very weak final week, WEAK there, of the regular season, and, like, take a four-game win streak, even though it's against the two crappiest teams in the league, and, okay, we're going to take this high into the first round against whoever it could be.
Yeah, and like you said, this weekend coming up is a good time to start to turn that, right? Who'd you say, Detroit and New York Islanders?
No, or... Vancouver and Detroit. So.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, I mean, for context, you're getting, like, or the Wild are getting the same percentage of real goals as Colorado and Buffalo, like, slightly better than, and only slightly worse than New Jersey. Like, the Wild aren't that bad, you know? They're just not. And this will change. And it's tough because the play looks good. You know, I think of the Jets game, you know? Sure, you can be mad at some of the goals that Hellebuck let in, but on the other hand, he made, like, 32 saves by the second period. It just... stuff like that, where you go, this team is clearly struggling, but they're not terrible at the same time either. So mm-hmm. So what's going on? I think it's just, you know, they can't buy a bit of good luck right now. And I think that'll change. But until it does, I'm really interested to see what happens with them. The other team I think that's interesting that you brought up is Chicago. They're the complete opposite of that story. Like, they're okay by expected goals over this past little run here. They're at, like, 50.5, and their plus minus is about the, or not their plus minus, excuse me, their Corsi is about the same. So, you know, you got two teams where it's like, this isn't really anything special. So I'm really curious to see that Central Division matchup, because I think it's going to shock a lot of people. I just don't see, you know, the same Blackhawks of years past.
Biggest shock will be that Minnesota continues this crappy gameplay. Chicago pulls a complete 180 and joins us in playing poorly, and Nashville wins the division. Like, that's the most ridiculous. That's what ends up happening. That would be
I don't even know if that's possible.
No, I don't think it is. Nashville would have to go 10-0, and Minnesota and Chicago would have to go 0-10 for that to actually happen. So that's how
I was trying to explain that to a non-hockey fan the other day, that, like, yeah, just because there's a 10-point difference between Winnipeg and a postseason spot, and there's, you know, 10 games left, doesn't mean they can make it up. It's just, that's just not how the schedule works. One team that's been super hot recently, though, excluding the Flames, is the Montreal Canadiens, though. They've quietly been really, really good. 8-2-0 in their last 10, 10-2 in their last 12. This team is, like, quietly really good.
Yeah, they're kind of they had a good weekend against Ottawa. That was
talk about that.
Huge to put some difference.
Ottawa sucked. Those games were just painful to watch. Like, going into those games, I was iffy if the Sens could contend with the Habs. I didn't think they could, but, you know, sometimes something about Montreal brings up another level of Ottawa. They had, like, four shots in 8 minutes in the second period last night. They're just nothing about the Senators team. I don't care what the experts say. Nothing about this team, watching them night in, night out, gives me any sort of confidence that they can do anything in the playoffs.
Are they falling back to Earth a little bit, do you think?
I don't think they were ever that far from Earth. Like, they never really were great. They were just always like, eh, good enough in a really crappy year, in a really crappy division. And I think they're just continuing that. There was a slight period where they were showing slow and steady improvement, and it was like, hey, look, maybe this whole system thing is finally catching on, which, like, you know, it's not something that I really buy into. I don't think the guys just suddenly discovered what Boucher was trying to get them to do, but whatever, you know, maybe it was finally working, and then just back to normal, you know, back to 48% of the shot share, 49% of the shot share, 48% of the goal share, or the expected goal share, and just, you know, Craig Anderson is having a Vezina caliber year. Let's be real. If that's not happening, what is this team? You know, they're not a playoff caliber team, in my opinion. And I think Montreal proved that this weekend. I don't know, they're one team, though, that I'm looking forward to. I don't know how to judge them. Like, how deep can this Habs team go? Because, you know, you look at the first round matchup, and it's the Rangers right now. Like, that's, like, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, a Lundqvist-less Rangers, at least.
True. Still but even, a fast, dangerous
team. Even
with
Lundqvist, he's not what he used to be. So even if they have Lundqvist, Price is still leaps and bounds better than him. So, I mean, it'll be an intriguing matchup. Don't get me wrong. It'll be one of those, like, dream first-round matchups. You know, you see so many times. Yeah, not so much in hockey because it is, like, sometimes that second wild card spot and the team that plays them in the first round, you know, it can be such a tight matchup, and it's not like in the NBA where you have the one playing the 8th seed and it's like, okay, the first rounds are pretty much, except for the 4-5 seed, maybe the 3-6. Usually the other ones are just blow up like blow offs, right? Mm-hmm. At least in the NHL you don't have that, which is nice. Like, I mean, you know, you could easily see Montreal and the Rangers being a Eastern Conference final matchup, not a first round matchup. And that's what'll be great about the playoffs, especially for the East. And it will be interesting to see if Montreal can take the streak that they're on and the good play they have and with Price and everything and show, like, yeah, we won our division. It's a really bad division. And so we won that. So we're a good team. Yeah. But are you a good team in a bad division? And you utilize that. But can you compete with the likes of the Washingtons, the Pittsburghs, the New York Rangers, you know, all those teams? Can you, even the Bostons, I would say, can you compete with those teams, or did you just luck out and play well in a bad division?
I think Montreal is undoubtedly better than New York this year. My biggest fear is just New York is a very fast, very dangerous team. And they're, you know, if I had to bet on one team that I didn't think was capable of making the Eastern Conference Finals, upsetting a team that I would have projected there, it would be the Rangers this year, because they do have the offensive capabilities to do that. So I don't know. I'm not sold. I like Montreal's play recently. I liked some of the deadline acquisitions. I think Jordy Benn helps a ton. I think Carey Price helps, you know, being Carey Price as he has been. He's improved a bit. Part of that is the Boucher, or not the Boucher, excuse me, the Claude Julien systems on the PK. And part of it is just on it. As a whole, what Julien has done, but I think when you combine those three things, you wind up with a team that is perhaps a lot better than people give them credit for. So they're an interesting one to me. Any other teams you guys seen that I know we talked about Calgary a lot, so we can skip over them. But any other teams you guys seen that are you just think are getting hot at the right time? The Bruins are kind of there, like 7-3.
Yeah. Same yeah, the Bruins are there, and I mean, and the Bruins are second in the league on the PK, so that's, you know, that's obviously a good stat to be leading in the league, to be second in the league, which is, it's Florida's first, by the way, in case nobody knew that. Florida leads the league in the PK, yet they're not their playoff out. So sometimes it doesn't really, like, you can lead the league in the PK or in other stats like that, in shots per game, whatever. Sometimes it just doesn't calculate to a playoff appearance or wins, but PK is big, especially when you get to the playoffs, because, you know, you're going to commit penalties. And then the ability to not, you know, let the other team take advantage of that extra man too much is going to be key. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's good for Boston. You know, I think Boston could do something in the playoffs, especially with everybody's favorite point leading player in Brad Marchand.
He's my favorite.
Hashtag massive joke.
Love Marchand.
Nick hates it.
No.
99% of the hockey world is like, really? Brad Marchand?
I don't like Brad Marchand, and I don't like the Boston Bruins.
I'm not a huge Bruins fan, but I love me some Brad Marchand, and I'm so happy to see him. I want him to get the trophy. Just take it home, baby. Because he's not getting hurt. I'm not a Bruins fan. Let's be real.
I'm not a Bruins fan, but they could do something.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I think for sure. I want him to get it. Give him the Art Ross. He won't win the heart. That's what's happening. You know who we didn't mention? Columbus. Also 8-2-0 in their last 10. They are fifth in the league since, like, over the last month in expected goal share.
They've also clinched a playoff spot.
They have clinched a playoff
spot. Off to the postseason they go.
And Torts, if I read a tweet correctly, he's now led three different teams to 100-point seasons, which he's, like, the first coach to ever do that. Mm-hmm. I know everybody rags on Torts and, you know, says he sucks, and it's like, does he really, though? Like, he's led three different franchises to 100-point seasons. Like, yes, he's a bit of a, you know, PITA on the mic and with the media and stuff, of course. Everybody knows that's just his attitude. But then, you know, it makes you wonder, like, if you're a team, and I don't think we even mentioned let's talk about Torts, so I won't get into it too much. But if you're a team, do you kind of, like, look at Torts and just say, okay, we're going to push your attitude and stuff onto the side? Because clearly you can be successful with a team. You've done it with three different teams. There's some coaches that are happy to get to 100 points with one team, let alone three.
No, there's no way you can look at this 100-point season and say that's Torts. Maybe to a certain degree, yeah, but there's no way that you can say, yeah, the guy with the leading Vezina candidate or number three Vezina candidate this year, who also went on the longest win streak in NHL history, is the reason behind their 100-point season. You know, 32 of those points came in a single streak. That, it, let's be honest, does not happen if you play this season out 1,000 times. You know, maybe they get 16, maybe they get 20. Hell, maybe they get 24 of those 32. But there's no way they grab those 32 again. Like, is Torts a bad coach? No. No, by no means. But I take this season with a grain of salt. I mean, you've got one of the best goalies in the league and a phenomenal run. The stars lined up, in my opinion. You know, maybe they're a 90-point team, which is still good.
And I'm there.
But, you know.
And I'm there, too. I mean, you know, that streak certainly has made their success this season look skewed to somebody who is looking at it in a full season capacity, right? Like, it definitely, that win streak, like, messes it up a little bit. And I still have my doubts on what they can do in the playoffs, so I hope that they play well, because I am one of those guys that like seeing different teams. Like, I always get sick of the, oh, here's Pittsburgh, Washington again. Woohoo! Like, you know, like, and chances are it's going to happen. It won't shock me if that's what happens whatsoever. But, you know, I just find it gets stagnant. I find it doesn't, unless you're a big hockey fan like the three of us are, and probably people who listen to this, you are a big hockey fan. You're not just your, you know, casual fan. If you listen to this guy, if you're listening to this podcast, you'll like it because, you know, it's quality hockey. It's the playoffs. It's what I'm going to watch. But if you're not somebody who is, I find it gets stagnant. So I would like to see Columbus do something. I'd like to see Calgary take the run they're on now, put that something in the playoffs, you know. Obviously, I would love to see Chicago get out in the first round, kind of thing. You know, it's just those things. I mean, in my perfect delusional world, that those kind of things would happen. But I think it would be nice for the league. But the league may disagree. Like, you never know what Bettman is thinking. Bettman would be like, no, I want Washington, Pittsburgh every year now until Ovi and Crosby retire. That would be ideal for me, money in my pocket.
They also want Chicago to win the cup every year. So
yeah, exactly.
Anything with a big market. You know what I will say? I am much more excited for the Columbus-Pittsburgh series now than I was, you know, a month ago. Both teams have really picked up their – well, I shouldn't say that. The Jackets have really picked up their quality of play and as a result, I think they can now give Pittsburgh much more of a run for their money than this team would have, say, the January to February team. You know, that team was, let's be honest, they were slightly above 500. You know, they, yeah.
Run for their money, as in they'll take Pittsburgh to 6-7 games? Or
yeah, I think Pittsburgh takes it in 6.
As in they could upset them and actually beat Pittsburgh.
Well, I would go Pittsburgh in 6 if I was making a bet today.
Okay.
They could win the President's Trophy, eh? Columbus?
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, they're right up there. Washington has 100 points. So
don't do it, Columbus. Don't do it.
There's so many options.
Don't give yourself.
I mean, there's what, four teams?
Last game, President's Cup.
Yeah, there's probably like four teams in the run.
Washington, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Chicago.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be interesting if at the end of the year, like, Washington and Columbus are tied for that, and the coaches of those teams just go, we have to lose today. I don't want the President's Trophy. It's first. Go out there and play crappy. Like, if you shoot the puck on the net, you're benched the rest of the game. Like, can you imagine if it was like that?
Someone did an article on it. It's a statistical article that looks at the probability of winning the Stanley Cup as the league's best team, which isn't necessarily always the President's Trophy winner. In this article's case, it was, you know, a variety of statistics. And basically what they found, it was a professor, by the way. It wasn't just like some dude. Like, it was an actual statistics professor. And what they found was that the best team had a 22% chance of winning the cup against the field. Like, that's the best odds in hockey. Less than a 1 in 4 chance. Like, that says something about the sport, about the parity in the league. And I think it's neat then that there's four teams who are challenging for the President's Trophy. I don't think you can call that those teams as 25% of 22%, but it's certainly interesting. What would that be? 5.5? Yeah. Still, though.
I'm an art student, Colton. I don't do math.
Dude, I dropped math in grade 10, all right? And I can do
yeah,
that. So.
Hey, grade 11 for me. I got a 50% grade 11 math and never looked back.
I did summer school math 1 year, not because I failed, but because my mom didn't think I got a high enough grade.
So you got a lower grade at the end of the summer?
No, I aced that summer because, okay, so story time with Colton. I was in an accelerated math class. So in grade 10. So in grade 10, we did half of grade 10 because we'd done the first half of grade 10 math the year before and all of grade 11. And so I ended up passing the class with like a 67. And my mom made me go do summer school for, you know, to improve this mark. The issue was I was doing grade 10 math in summer school, but that wasn't what I'd had troubles with in school. It was the grade 11 stuff that I had troubles with. So I came out of summer school with like a 98. Like, yeah, that's fine. I already knew all of that. We still haven't got to the actual stuff I don't understand. And then the second time over in grade 11, wound up with like a 75. It was like, I still don't get it. I'm done with this. So there you go, story time with Colton. And that's how I got into advanced stats. I love it now.
It's like those bubble teams in the NHL. They know how to be successful in the regular season, but they know how to do it in the postseason.
Just like, let me keep doing this easy stuff over and over and over again. It doesn't help at all, but eventually I'll get there. All right, let's move on. I know you guys want to talk about duos. Graham brought this up in our little group chat today. He was talking about some of the best duos over the 2016-2017 season, not necessarily line mates, but just two guys on a team that are fantastic. And Graham, I know you've got a list, so let's hit us. Who do you think has been the best duo this year? Two players.
The best.
Yes,
duo?
I'm throwing it at you. You got to put a number one to them.
Okay, I'll put a number one to it as the best duo because I feel like I can kind of back it up, and I feel like the other four I got on here will be a little more of an interesting conversation. I'll go with McDavid and Draisaitl as the best duo, in my opinion. I'll finish it with that. McDavid, obviously, 80-point guy already. And, you know, there's still 10 games left in the season, I think, for the Oilers, maybe even 11. So, I mean, if he goes on a tear, he could finish with 100 points. Unlikely. But
that would
possible.
Be quite a tear.
But Draisaitl, like, McDavid has 25 goals. Draisaitl has 24. So the only point – Draisaitl is 63 points. The 17-point spread difference between those two guys is all in the assist column. So, and Draisaitl is quietly having, is quietly going to finish with a 70-point year, maybe 65, let's say, to, somewhere between 65 and 70. And there's not too many players in the league that can go and put up 65, 70 points and, oh, yeah, I didn't know he did that well. Like, there's not many guys out there that can do that. But when you're playing behind McDavid, you can afford to do that, and nobody's going to know who you are. I have a fantasy with my buddy and with my buddies, and there's about eight of us in there. We each have 15 players, so there's like at least 100 guys. None of us took Draisaitl, right? And now we're all kicking ourselves for it. So I'll say McDavid Draisaitl as the best duo in the league.
Fair.
Draisaitl's got like 12 more points this year than he did last year at this time.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. I mean, it comes with playing with McDavid, but you know, and shooting at an insanely high clip, but still, he has been fantastic. I think it's got to be Crosby Malkin, though, right?
Well, that's just the obvious one. I mean, I could have said that, but that's what 95% of our listeners would have said, right? So that's why I was like, well, I won't go with the obvious. I'll move away from that.
Okay, I can respect it. I can respect it. Here's one you probably didn't think of. Derek Brassard and Mark Stone.
Oh. Mr. Ottawa guy stepping in.
Both in the top.
And he didn't even name Carlson.
I know. Because both Brassard and Stone are in the top 11 relative Corsi players. Mark Stone, we all know, one of the best wingers in the league. Easily the best defensive one. Brassard's been a shot-generating machine. The points haven't been there, I'll give you that. He's only got like 37 on the year. But he has driven play at an incredible rate on a crappy Senators team this year. And I think they have very quietly been one of the more effective duos in the league this year. I wouldn't even bring them anywhere close near number one. But they have been phenomenal this year. Other ones, I've got Victor Arvidsson and Ryan Johansson. Those two have been fantastic. Like, just absolutely lights out. Arvidsson, like, yes, he benefits by playing with Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson. But, like, if you look at his shot numbers, especially his, like, possession numbers, they're the best on that trio. You know, like, he is not dead weight. And I've been pumping his tires since, last year, maybe even the year before that, basically when I discovered him. He is very, very solid. I'm a huge fan. The third one I have, and it's kind of cheaty because I went with three guys, but it's the Backlund, Tkachuk, and Frolik line in Calgary. I think they've been the best line in the NHL. Plain and simple.
I'll rebuttal with all three in a real quick rebuttal. Okay. The first one with Ottawa. Agree. They're a very effective duo. Like you said, would you put them as one of the best? No, but effective, I'll give you that. Kyle Turris has had an amazing bounce back year after his injury season last year, so that's kind of why I didn't mention them, because Turris has had an amazing bounce back year. Kind of thing, so that's why it's a little iffy.
I'd put Brassard ahead of Turris this year, honestly.
Fair enough.
Partially because Turris is playing with crappy wingers, though.
Right. When I look at Nashville, it's the same thing you said with Phil Forsberg, right? So to me, it's more of a trio there than a duo.
Fair.
Again, in my opinion, not disagreeing with what you said, they're very, very good players. Forsberg, I know I talked about him at the beginning of the season, like a month in, like, what is wrong with this guy? He's got like one goal in 12 games. Like, he was horrible. And now it's like, oh yeah, turn it around.
Well, terrible. That whole Predators team was terrible at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And now it's, where'd this come from?
Yeah.
And Calgary, they got a good young team out there. Like, Calgary's got a lot of pieces. They're making it work. They as a team, why I didn't pick a duo is because they could easily have six forwards. So taking out point producing defensemen, I don't even know if they really have any out there, but they could have six forwards reach 50 points. Not many teams are going to be able to say we have six different forwards that are going to reach 50 points. I couldn't tell you what the six were. I just quickly looked up their stats. And I think I say could reach 50 because there's a couple guys that have like 46, 47, so easily they could have six guys reach 50 points. To put that on a flip side, again, using a crappy team, and just because I need a second to poke fun at Nick here, Detroit's going to have one player reach 50 points in Henrik Zetterberg. Calgary could have six. Sorry, Nick, I had an opportunity to poke fun at them.
And Zetterberg's one of the older guys on the team, too.
Right? So that's why I didn't pick a duo in Calgary, but I agree with all the points you said, Colton. So.
For Calgary, three of those guys are Backlund, Frolik, and Tkachuk. The other three, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Dougie Hamilton is the other one.
Oh, I guess Dougie Hamilton's living up to his trade value.
47 points Burke. This year.
Yeah.
47. That's a wild number. In case you didn't know. All right, Graham, I know you've got a huge list. Hit us with the next one.
Okay, I'll hit you with the next one. I'll go with Boston and with another guy who's going to quietly have a potential 70-point season playing behind Brad Marchand, who I mentioned earlier, with David Pastrnak. He's having a 63-point year, 31 goals, 32 assists. He's playing really well, and he's similar to Drysdale. Playing behind Marchand is quietly going to have a 70-point year, and you wouldn't think of that. Fair. So that's another duo I got. Looking at Columbus, I have Atkinson and Wennberg. Wennberg has 54 points, but only 12 of those are goals. So he is an assist guy. Huge assist guy. I would almost compare him to like a Nicholas Backstrom type player. Like Backstrom's not going to score you a lot, but Backstrom will consistently have 50 assist seasons because of who he plays with. Another team, not a playoff team, but I think a team that clearly has arguably one of the top 5 1-2 punches in Dallas with Sagan and Jamie Benn. You know, Sagan's got 68 points. Ben's got 63. They both got 24 goals. You know, very solid 1-2 punch there. Klingberg's starting to come around as a defenseman. I still think Dallas has a lot of work before they'll be a threat again in the playoffs. But it's a very solid 1-2 punch there with Sagan and Ben. And the last one I'll mention, I'm going to go to Chicago. And people are probably thinking, he just said Chicago. He's going to say Kane and Taves. But I'm not. I will say Kane. Because obviously Kane's got 79 points, 32 goals this year. But the 1-2 punch that I'm going to go as a duo with Kane is Artemi Panarin, who has 66 points with 24 goals. The Taves overrated stuff I know is starting to come around again. Nick was mentioning that before we came on the air. And is he overrated? No. Is he elite? No. Is he very good? Yes. You know, Colton is saying he thinks he's one of the top 10 centers in the league. I would say he's top 20. Don't ask me to name 10 better centers right now because I'm not going to do it off the top of my head. But for me, Chicago, the duo there now is Kane and Panarin. And I'm not saying Chicago's going to move on from Jonathan Taves anytime soon. But it's now, to me, your point guys are now Kane and Panarin with Taves as a very solid third point guy.
Well, were those guys not their point guys last year too?
Yeah. Panarin had a ridiculous rookie year. I'd never heard of it.
Right?
And he went, I think he had like a 60-point year last year as a rookie.
Yeah, but it doesn't count. I have harped on this train for so long. Panarin should not have counted as a rookie. You can't play three years in the KHL and be classified as a rookie. You were playing in the second best league in the world against
I agree with you, but that's the way the rules are laid out, right?
Oh, yeah, I get that. But like, it's not like he was a real rookie.
No, you know? He wasn't.
So
77 points he put up.
It is a different league, and it is impressive that he had that point total.
Oh, don't get me wrong. All of that's impressive. I think what staggers me more about Panarin is that nobody else brought him over.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And maybe it's because he had personal reasons, and, you know, Chicago is Chicago, but, like, you look at that and you're like, how did a guy like that who was tearing it up in the K, you know, as far as goal scoring goes, not get a little attention? Why aren't more teams doing this?
Great question. So, I mean, yeah, so he was a rookie and not really a rookie kind of thing. And I mean, and that happens in a lot of sports, I almost find. And when I say a lot, I should say it's more just like baseball where you get like the people who defect from Puerto Rico and they've been playing professional ball and they're like 27. It's like, you're not a rookie. Like,
Japan
like
in the old days?
Rookies are 18, 19-year-old kids who have just finished playing college ball or, you know, or they're coming out of the OHL or something kind of thing. Like, that's to me what you're – I mean, Matthews and Laine, they're, like, true rookies, right? Like, they didn't go and play in the K for 5 years or however long Panarin did and then come over and then light it up here. It's just – to me, it's very interesting that Panarin came from the K last season and now people are like, oh, yeah, there's that John – well, at least for me – I go, oh, yeah, there's that Jonathan Taves guy still in Chicago who's pretty good. But there's this Panarin kid who is, for lack of a better word, overshadowing him slightly.
Well, I mean, didn't Ichiro, speaking of young rookies, didn't he win the rookie at, like, 26 or something like that? Like, stupidly old?
Yeah. I use baseball as a comparison to Panarin because it happens a lot where you get really good players who are rookies in the MLB, but they've been playing professionally in Japan or Puerto Rico or Dominican or Cuba or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they got a chance to go and play for the Yankees or whatever. Oh, okay, I'll go do that. So
Ichiro is my new Panarin comparison. That's what I'm going with from now on.
Oh, somebody write an article about that. Artemi Panarin and Ichiro Suzuki.
There we go. All right. Did we miss any interesting duos? I'd throw out Hedman and Kucherov. I think they're another one that's been quietly very good. And by quietly, I mean the only two good players on the Lightning for most of the season. You know, they've had Drouin point, especially recently. But, you know, those two have been carrying that team.
And Drouin's a nice story, too. And I like Kucherov. In my opinion, Tampa should move on from Stamkos. I don't know. I just – not saying Stamkos isn't good. Like, as I'm saying that –
he signed to good deal. Healthy is an issue, but, I mean, he signed to a good deal.
Oh, it's great.
Those injuries.
Well, that's the thing, you know? Like, as far as getting that player, like, is he worth $8 million, especially with this? Maybe not, and it looks like his stats are declining, like, as far as just shot numbers go. But, you know, if you find a way to keep this man healthy and producing like we know he can, then 8x8's not bad at all for him. One of the players that I didn't mention.
Is that what his contract is? 8 years, $8 million?
Just about, yeah.
I think it's not, 8.5, maybe.
Not exactly. It's 8.5 or 8.25.
If it were me, I would have done 4 years, $20 million, and just and left it. I know he wouldn't have taken it, and I know I may be undervaluing him with that, but the health issues concern me, and Kucherov is an elite player. He can lead your team. So
That's the contract you want to give a guy like Stamkos. There's no way he stays, though, for that contract. And they just didn't have the cap room for it.
But then I'd let him go and sign somewhere else then and let his injury problems be another team's issue.
But then you get nothing for him. You're letting Stamkos walk for nothing.
Yeah, I know sounds stupid, but you can let him walk for nothing or you can pay him $8 million to play 12 games. Like,
yeah, but you can trade Steven Stamkos on $8 million. There's teams willing to get Steven Stamkos on that contract.
Especially at a deadline deal.
I don't know about that, because that's a lot of salary to unload, but like off-season, when a team's like planning their base, you can definitely ship out Stamkos if you need to.
And I would, if I were them.
All right, what about Scheifele and Laine?
I was going to bring them up. There's no way you can ignore what they've been doing in Winnipeg. They have fantastic players. I was talking to, I'm going to screw up his name, Dom Luchishin. I butchered it again. I was talking to him earlier. I even had him like explain how to say his name, and I just cannot do it. Cause I always called it Luchishin, but the first CH is a ch sound, so it's like Luchishin. I don't know. Even when he says it sounds like a mumble.
Phonics with Colton Frick.
The point of this story was I was talking with him. We were talking about his game score, and I was like, you know, why do you think your models value the Jets so highly? And he was just like, look, like, you know, the individual players on that team are fantastic. Like, that top six as a whole is great. You know, Scheifele and Laine are monsters. Ehlers has been a monster this year. You know, at some point it does come down to coaching, but you're totally right to bring up that duo because they're fantastic.
Even Blake Wheeler.
Oh, he is easily one of the best wingers in the league. He is so underrated.
Yeah. I agree.
Like, that dude does not get enough love. Him, Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, three most underrated wingers.
I'd give you that. I totally agree. Blake Wheeler's super underrated. Like, I like what Winnipeg has. Like, they're very close. Like, they're a team that I'm curious to see how their offseason goes. Curious to see how they draft, what prospects they have coming up. Interested to see what they do in net. Like, they're very close, and I like what they have there. If I had a voice in the voting matter, to me the Calder would go to Laine. It would go Laine, Werenski, then Auston Matthews. And I know I'd probably be one of the few people out there that would put Auston Matthews as third in the Calder. That's going to be a completely separate discussion for probably 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I would butcher your vote.
Because people listening can tell you that Colton and Nick just were like, oh god, that's going to be an intense conversation with this knucklehead. I'm a sucker for defensive rookies who can be point guys. I loved Gostisbehere last year. I liked Oh, the Florida guy.
Ekblad.
Brain farting. Ekblad, I like him. He's really tailed off.
Even though
then.
Klingberg should have won.
I'm a sucker for rookie defensemen who put numbers up. So I'll admit that. So that's why my opinion there is a little clouded. And it's just Matthews plays with Marner and other rookies that are not just as good, but point wise, you're so close to him. Well,
the thing is, Matthews plays with Zach Brown and Connor Hyman, or Connor Brown and Zach Hyman.
I was gonna say yeah. Either way. Does it matter? Does it matter who the other two linemates are with Matthews? Like,
well, no. I think that's the upside to Matthews. That's the selling point. Is that look, you know, you've got a guy like Mitch Marner or Matthew Tkachuk who are having phenomenal rookie seasons, and both of them deserve Calder votes and real consideration. The issue is, you know, in Tkachuk's case, he's playing with Frolik and Backlund, who have been two of the best defensive forwards. And together, they are one of the best lines in the NHL. You look at a guy like a Mitch Marner, who's got, you know, a Kadri and a JVR on his wing. Well, you know, Kadri in the middle and JVR on the other wing. The point is, those are also phenomenal players. It's not like Mitch Marner is dragging, you know, Nikita Shashnikov up the ice with him each time. You know, Austin Matthews is doing this with two rookies beside him. And I mean, let's be real. William Nylander is a fantastic player because he spent a lot of time with him. And Zach Hyman has a lot of talent, too. And Connor Brown is an older rookie. But it's still impressive that he's doing it with guys who have such little NHL experience, in my opinion.
Heck, I go out on a limb and say Matthews could do it with Colton Prale on his left and Nick Sagan on his right.
You've never seen me skate.
Please, I'd be holding Austin Matthews out.
Yeah.
Oh God!
Somehow I don't think that's the case,
and that's why I play at Moss Park Arena every Sunday morning.
Oh, dude! I wish I'd known you like a year ago. We would have had the best games. Oh boy! If ever any of you that are listening are from Toronto, never go to Moss Park Arena. Just don't do it. There's better places to play.
If you do play on Sunday mornings, let me know.
Nick will be the bad one skating around in a Red Wings jersey
with the chair support in front of me as I learn how to skate.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. No, Nick, dig in. Skates angle them a little. Oh, I was trying to teach someone to skate this winter, and that was like the biggest thing. It was like, okay, you're trying to walk on the ice, I need you to actually skate.
Speaking of the chair support, I'm assuming you guys are done. So I was gonna wrap this up with some news. Unless you guys have other stuff.
No, go for it. Go for it.
Speaking of the chair support, for anybody listening, it's Facebook, knowledge now. So I will be having a child in September. So as the 2017-2018 season revs up, I'll have another Wild fan joining me. So maybe there'll be three of us in Southern Ontario. Half my wife's family is a Habs fan. The other half are Leafs fans. So clearly that merchandise would be easier to find. I'm already on Amazon getting the Minnesota Wild onesies because I got to somehow get another Wild fan in the family. So I might as well do it with my own kid.
For those wondering, we have called child support. We do know that's torture. They're investigating.
Hey, Minnesota Wild is good now. Torture would be if Nick was having a kid.
They're investigating. Oh, I guess that's one more deal that I will throw in here before we sign off. Eric Staal. And Mikael Granlund. Yeah, those two guys have crushed it in Minnesota this year, and they deserve some respect. But that's where we're going to end it.
I got one more, dude.
Oh, yeah, one
Graham
more? Graham
and his
more?
Wife. Congratulations,
yes.
Buddy. That's great news.
Yes, whoever was crazy enough to marry Graham and then have his child, you deserve a medal.
All right, that's all I have.
That's how we're ending it. This is the Game Time Decision Podcast. If you liked it, you can find all of our episodes on lastwordonhockey.com, online, on SoundCloud, on iTunes. Just search Last Word on Hockey, Podbean as well, Twitter, GTD_podcast. You can find each of us on there as well, at Colton Prale, at Nick Sega 19, at GHAM614. We will see you next week. Analytics series coming up this week with Dom. I'm not going into the last name. Bye-bye.